Hey, Ryan, since you're not going to the game, where are you planning on watching the Wildcats?
I'll be stuck at the office, but I wish I could be lounging at home in front of my TV.
Yeah, me too. I've been thinking about getting like a big comfy recliner from Sam Levitt's Furniture.
Ooh, stylish.
Sam Levitt's Furniture has specials on a wide selection of recliners, so you can watch the game in style. You can check out a bunch of options at their Tucson locations. I'm thinking of getting one with swivel action.
Ooh.
But I kind of like the one I saw with cup holders.
Well, while Justin makes up his mind about which recliner he likes best, let's talk some sports.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Yeah. Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Dominic Pacheco over there, sitting over there on that corner of the table. I'm sitting on the other side, Justin Spears. Thank you for tuning in.
What's going on?
You are either getting this podcast via the Wildcaster app or Apple Podcast. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, get us at Instagram. Pac-12 tournament. It is officially March Madness, Dom.
Here we go. Best time of the year. It's Christmas.
Christmas in Tucson.
Yep.
It is. Because
for college basketball fans, it's the best time of the year.
The weather's getting warmer.
You can't stop. Yeah, it's supposed to be 80 degrees this
week. Yeah.
Coming up soon here. And it's got March basketball on. I loved it. I hated it. I hated the Big Ten tournament for all last week. I didn't watch any of it. And all I did was I was a hater. You know, to everyone, why it's stupid Big Ten tournament's on this week. It's a week early. They're all going to be tired. You know, the week off before the NCAA starts. And then on Sunday came around, and I wasn't working, but they had Big Ten championship basketball on, and I was living large. Like, thank you, Big Ten.
I was that hater, not for the timing of their tournament, but the fact that they played it at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
I was like...
Which you'll
want to be Big East.
I'll still be a Big Ten hater, but thanks for that game. It wasn't even a good game. I shouldn't even be thanking them now. It was a crappy game.
All right, Dom. So the Arizona Wildcats are crowned Pac-12 regular season champions. They head into the tournament as the number one seed. They're going to play the winner of Colorado and ASU. But before we get into that, because we're going to talk to Bruce Pasco from the Arizona Daily Stars, our very own beat writer. He'll join us to talk about that matchup. But let's go ahead and just kind of briefly review the regular season because, you know, going into this season, it was like, oh, this was supposed to be the year. Mm-hmm. You know, if last year was the 20-year anniversary of the 97 National Championship team, what better way to follow that up than pretty much putting the most stacked Arizona team on paper?
You know how everything was lining up perfectly for Arizona in March last year.
With, oh,
you know, the
perfect.
Final Four being Phoenix. That was their route. This season was their season.
Yeah.
That was the equivalent. That's
exactly.
That's how I look at it.
But, exactly.
You know, not... Didn't go that way, I don't think.
No.
You know, a lot
did
of ups and downs.
Go.
Right out of the gate, it didn't go that way.
Yeah, Bahamas.
But here we are, Pac-12 champs, one seed in the Pac-12 tournament. You know, not the path we thought Arizona would take, but here they are.
My concern was I really thought that this Arizona team was going to overwhelm mm-hmm. pretty much every single team that they've played this year.
Yeah, especially in the past. Such a weak Pac-12.
Weak sauce, man. But they didn't. There was a lot of games they played at home where it pretty much went down to the last few minutes. You know, I'm looking at particular teams like Utah, Colorado,
Oregon State,
Stanford,
California,
Cal on senior day.
One of the worst teams in the Pac-12 in the last X amount of decades. I mean, you haven't seen a team this bad in
two wins.
Years and years and years and years and years.
Two wins in the conference. And
must be Arizona at home and McHale.
They didn't take Arizona
day.
To the woodshed, but man, they definitely made them scared.
And at the end of the day, it's a two game cushion for Arizona in the Pac-12.
Exactly. So what does that say? This season definitely did not exceed my expectations, but it really made me, you, Bruce Pasco, especially Ryan Finley, our boss, Greg Hansen, everybody that's been on staff covering basketball.
Caitlin Schmidt,
the newest member of the sports desk. She's going to be doing a lot of investigative reporting for us. I mean, she already has been. She's been killing the game. It has been so exhausting for everybody on staff. And I'm looking back at the 2015-16 year when they pretty much the biggest news was Alonzo Trier broke his hand and was out for 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. And they just went on about their season. Even last year when Trier was suspended 19 games for a failed performance-enhancing drug test.
So 13-14 when they started 21-0?
Yes, and then Brandon Ashley mm-hmm. broke his foot, and yeah. he was like, oh my gosh,
yeah, against Cal,
Arizona
yeah.
lost. Yeah. Like,
Cal
oh.
had the buzzer beater, stormed the court.
Those seasons just seemed like amateur hour. Seriously, because you have the FBI investigation at the beginning of the season, mm-hmm. right before the season starts, and then Raleigh breaks his foot, and then the Bahamas fall out, and then Keanu Pinder,
yeah.
Phelps was suspended. Yeah. Phelps was suspended. Dylan Smith was suspended for team violations. Okay, we get through that part. Arizona's moving and grooving. Bam, right before the end of the season, the final road series of the year, what happens?
More FBI investigation.
ESPN reports of, you know, of FBI wiretaps, phone conversations, Sean Miller, DeAndre Ayton, Pedro Kurtz, yada, yada, yada.
Fill in the blanks.
Oh, my gosh. This has been so exhausting.
The one savior to it all, the one constant that we've been able to fall back on and go, okay, you know, we're watching something special and we get to cover this guy, DeAndre Ayton,
yeah,
throughout the entire season.
That guy is amazing. Mm-hmm. He just won Pac-12 awards. It's pretty much a good segue right there.
There you go.
Ayton won.
It was almost like I planned that, right?
It's pretty nice, man.
I swear it was unintentional, but I'm glad I did it.
He won Pac-12 Player of the Year, Pac-12 Freshman of the Year, made All Pac-12 First Team, made All Pac-12 Freshman Team, made All Pac-12 Defensive Team. A year that was probably Sean Miller's worst defensive team of his career at Arizona. He had his one shining star. Mm-hmm. And if you were to tell me that Ayton would make the first team All Defensive Team back in like November, December, I'd be like, yeah, whoa, whoa, whoa. I get Ayton's a once in a generation player, but. Right. His defense is suspect. He's been so dominant on the defensive side of the ball in Pac-12 play.
And how long have we been asking, you know, who's the defensive stopper on this team? We'll look no further. I mean, you know.
The big 7-1 guy in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a riddle. It's, you know, it's the guy who's the best at everything on this Arizona team. So sometimes we make it harder on ourselves than we need to. DeAndre Ayton is usually the answer to most questions we ask.
I've talked to Bruce Pascoe, and we'll talk to him coming up here pretty soon. But I mean, we've never seen a player like this in college basketball, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, you make the comparison to Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid was nearly this dominant when he was in college.
Right.
I mean, you compare him to other dominant bigs in college basketball history, and you could probably compare him to the most dominant big to ever play in college basketball, and that is Lou Alcindor. If you don't know who Lou Alcindor is, for the kids who don't know who he is, he goes by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar now.
Our editor Ryan Finley's laughing somewhere that we're saying the kids.
The kids. Yeah. When 6 years ago we had to raise our hand to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
but I look at Lou Alcindor. He did average 29 points a game.
Did he really?
Yeah, and 15.5 rebounds on 66% shooting. Bill Walton at UCLA, his best season, 21 points, 15.5 rebounds per game, 64% shooting. Ayton is sitting at 19.9 points per game, 11.4 on 61.6% shooting, but he's got the shooting factor. Lou Alcindor and Bill Walton were shooting layups, hook shots. Most of their offensive production was closer to the rim. Where DeAndre Ayton, he's not afraid to pull up if you give him that little bit of a cushion.
Mm-hmm.
So, and let's evaluate the talent that Ayton is going up against.
Right.
You know, I would say that college basketball athletes are much better than when Lou Alcindor and Bill Walton were playing back in the – the 70s.
The other thing, three-point line.
The three-point line wasn't there.
Was not there for Walton and Ausländer. So back in the day, that was their game. I mean, that was 100% of their game. I mean, if you take away the three-point line now, there's no reason to do anything but get the ball to DeAndre Ayton and let him go to work down in the middle.
Absolutely.
I mean, sure, Alonzo Trier is a great finisher at the rim, but DeAndre Ayton's a little bit better. So. Yeah. I mean, a little bit different of a game. So when you look at averages like that, but yeah, I mean, the fact that we're sitting here comparing DeAndre Ayton to those kind of guys, I mean,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the fact he's even in the same breath is just. Mm-hmm. So it's a testament to how good DeAndre Ayton is, and we can't say it enough. I've been contemplating saying this all day, and I can't make up my mind, so I'm not gonna affirm it. But I was gonna come in here. It was one of the first things I thought about this morning. I roll out of bed and I go, you know what?
I got a hot take.
I go, you know what?
Is that what you said?
It is. And it's crazy because it's not really that hot of a take, but it is. I think it is. I think it's going to end up being a hot take. I was going to march in here and proclaim DeAndre Ayton will win National Player of the Year. But I just don't see the voters doing it, regardless of whether or not I think he is the National Player of the Year. I think Trae Young's done it. And that's the thing, is Trae Young fell off at the last half of the, not last half, but the last month here. And I think that's why he didn't win Big 12 Player of the Year, because Conference Player of the Years is just, that's just their conference games. So when you look at Trae Young's entire body of work, you have to take into account that, you know, he's been doing it the entire season, not just this last month doesn't weigh as much.
Yeah.
Where when voters are going, okay, who's the best player in the throughout the Big 12, you can go, well, the last 3 weeks, Trae Young kind of fell off.
Yeah.
And Devonta Graham, you know, it was the unanimous decision for Player of the Year in the Big 12. And you're going, so when Trae Young does win, and I backtrack and say Trae Young will win National Player of the Year, when voters do give him that award, a lot of people are going to ask, well, how can he be the best player, the Player of the Year, when he's not even the player, best player in his conference? It's because it's that kind of handicap where.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe the last 3 weeks he wasn't the best player in the Big 12, but throughout the course of the year, it's hard to make a case against Trae Young. Mm-hmm. So I will not proclaim that DeAndre Ayton will win National Player of the Year, but don't be surprised if it happens. He's getting close. If he's not already there, he's right on his tail.
Yeah, yeah. And Ayton did it from day one. And
absolutely.
I mean, it wasn't like, you know, he had a few weeks where he, you know, kind of went into an abyss, mm-hmm. and just completely fell off the grid.
As Trae Young has.
So Trae Young is how I got through in college. let me break it down real quick.
Tampering off at the end?
You always, exactly. You start off the semester so well, mm-hmm. and you set yourself up. I always make sure that that first month of school, I always make sure that all my assignments are turned in. I do everything well because I know later on down the road I'm going to start getting busy. You know, especially, you know, spring semester, you look at, you know, when we were in college, we had to deal with March Madness.
Yeah, I was just going to say blame it on March Madness.
Exactly. and then, you know, towards the end of the fall semester, I was always focused on the holidays. And my mind wasn't in school. That's something that's always at the tail end. That's why you always set something up, because you're still going to pass. I'm still going to get through, mm-hmm. but that's just because I made sure that my teacher knew that I was trying, that I was a really good student from day one, even though I might slip up towards the end. Trae Young is exactly that. So real quick before we get Bruce Pascoe on. On senior day, it was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. It was a day full of emotions. Parker Jackson Cartwright's last game, Dusan Ristic's last game, Talbot Denny,
mm-hmm.
the senior Tucson kid. It was his
South Point, right?
Yeah, South Point Catholic's finest. He went to, or he got some action, scored a point as an Arizona Wildcat. It was just 1 point. The first free throw he shot was bad. That was bad. But the second free throw he got it, and when that shot went in, I was like, man, that kid did something that millions of Tucsonans have dreamed of growing up, mm-hmm. and that is scoring a basket and playing for the Arizona Wildcats. So kudos to Talbot.
Also, while we're on the topic, I don't want to take that away from Talbot. You know,
great moment.
Especially for Tucson. I think it was you who tweeted it also. I mean, it's just nobody gets to do that. I mean, grow up in Tucson rooting for the Arizona Wildcats. I mean, if you're a kid out there, again, we bring up the kid references. I'm sorry. We're not that old. You can consider us kids too if you want. But for the other kids out there.
We're young.
Yeah. For the other youngins out there listening. I mean, imagine you've rooted for the Wildcats your whole life. Imagine going out there and playing for them on senior day and getting a point, cutting down nets afterward. I mean, pretty special moment.
That's awesome,
for Talbot Denny. One thing I want to touch on before we get Bruce Pascoe on the line, and we got a little bit of time here. Alonzo Trier is an intriguing story to me because he struggled on Cal. I don't want to say this for sure because I don't have the numbers up in front of me. I think it was his worst game of the year. Of his career. Yeah. The fewest points of his career. Had 2 points.
Yeah.
Let me pull up his stat line here because I'm going to need it. But yeah, he had 2 points. And the thing I want to touch on, Justin, is when he's struggling, why is he struggling? And you know, I say this and I take heat for it on Twitter as, you know, bashing Alonzo Trier. And, you know, look, I premise this with the fact that I think Alonzo Trier is one of the best, if not the best, definitely in the Pac-12, hands down in the Pac-12, one of the best guards at getting through the lane and finishing at the rim.
Yeah.
There's nobody who can do it as well as him. And sure. And even if he gets bumped around and gets hit a little bit, he goes to the foul line and you put one of the best free throw shooters in the country on the line. So that's where, in my opinion, Alonzo Trier thrives. When he's getting through the lane, when he's finishing at the rim or getting to the free throw line. And you look at the games where he struggles this year. Against Cal, he went 0 for 7 from three-point range, went 1 from 10 from the field. That tells me he's shooting way too much. Get to the lane. Finish at the rim. He started, and that bucket came late. I mean, he was scoreless for a majority of that game, played 29 minutes. I know he was in a little bit of foul trouble early, finished with 3 fouls, so not terrible. And he finished with 7 assists, so I'm not saying he had a miserable game. I'm just saying, look, an easy fix for Alonzo Trier in my book, in some long shot, if someone's listening to this, you can get in Alonzo Trier's ear, and if my opinion means anything, which it doesn't to Alonzo Trier, but my fix would be just get to the rim, and especially against a team like Cal where it's not going to be hard. I mean, he can carve up that defense with ease. Uh-huh. I mean, sure, if it was in the tournament and they're locking him down, that's one thing. But against Cal, stop shooting the three and get to the lane. I mean, because that's where I love seeing Alonzo Trier. That's when he's at his best. That's when I have the most fun watching him, is when he's getting to the rim.
That's where, when you're playing a team like Cal and Arizona's so talented, you don't really have to run and gun to necessarily mm-hmm. wear them down. You're so much more talented than them on paper. Not even on paper. You could just look at Arizona and look at Cal and already say that, the Wildcats are the best team.
I mean, you go back to the Colorado loss where he struggled with 8 points, 3 of 9 from the field, 2 of 8 from three. So the games where Utah, 36 minutes, 7 points, 2 of 5 from the field. Okay, 0 for 4, I didn't attempt three. But my point is, in all these games, he's also not shooting a lot of free throws. Didn't get to the line against Cal. That's a problem. If Alonzo Trier is not shooting a lot of free throws in the tournament, Arizona's not going anywhere because that's easy money. It's easy buckets, points for Alonzo Trier because he doesn't miss.
My point was, though, is that you don't have to really go out there and run. You have such a dominant guy with DeAndre Ayton on the low block. Mm-hmm. You could just swing the ball around and just slow down the pace and just tire him out. Just drown him out. They could have done that. Alonzo Trier could have had probably 14 points on 12 free throws that night, mm-hmm. but he didn't. And, I totally agree with you, Dom. Dom, what did you think about on senior night when they announced the seniors? Sean Miller went ahead and announced DeAndre Ayton, Raleigh Alkins, and Alonzo Trier as seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the post-game press conference said, they're not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they played their last game in McHale.
Mm-hmm.
So Miller essentially declared them for the draft. I've never seen that before.
No.
No. Even John Calipari, he's never been out and said, like, yeah, Carl Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis, they're going to the draft next year. Everybody knows it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But just for him to come out and blatantly say, yeah, they're gone
next year. What was crazy about it in this situation is that you look at a guy like Raleigh Alkins, and he's possibly a guy who could come back. You know, I mean, I don't think Raleigh Alkins is entirely NBA ready. I think he would benefit greatly with another year in college basketball. So you look at him, he could come back. You look at a guy like Alonzo Trier, who, okay, he's probably not coming back, but he's a junior. If he came back, he would solidify his legacy. He would, came back this year to chase a national championship. So you go, okay, well, what if they fall a little bit short? Could he come back again? There are some question marks around these guys, but let's be real. None of them are coming back with the cloud, the question mark that is Arizona basketball right now. There's no reason to. If these guys can get paid and can get drafted, if there's even a chance, they're going to go. Mm-hmm. I think Sean Miller knows that, and I think he knows how talented they are. Whether or not they're NBA ready, we say NBA ready, they can go play in the NBA right now.
Sure.
You know?
Raleigh dominated the NBA draft combine last year.
Yeah, absolutely. So they absolutely, and that, I'm not trying to take that away from them. Sure, they could benefit from another year at Arizona, but they'll be fine declaring early and leaving this year. Right.
Absolutely. Right. So anyways, Bruce Pasco, the wizard himself, I should call him.
The wizard. I like it. The bracketeer.
The bracketeer. We're all bracketeers. The three bracketeers right here in the Wildcast podcast. Let's go ahead and get Bruce.
Hello, my name is Bruce.
Hello, Bruce.
All right, we're here with Bruce Pasco. Bruce is on the other line getting ready for his trip to Las Vegas. Bruce, just looking at this season compared to other seasons in Las Vegas, I mean, the Pac-12 has been pretty much down this year. Would you kind of say that this is maybe not the most buzzed or the most talked about Pac-12 tournament in recent years?
Yeah, in a way, it is nationally. I think it probably is because there hasn't been a whole lot of talk about it. And, Arizona and SC have both kind of relatively underperformed to expectations, and they are the two best teams. But I think when you look at it, in a way, it's as interesting as almost any year, though, because you've got literally, like, you know, six other teams that could really make an argument to get in the tournament if they play well this week. So, you know, I mean, they're talking about, it seems like as a four, maybe now you look at four being in, but it could be a different four, you know, or it could be five, maybe even six, probably not, but it could be if the way things play out. So it's kind of interesting in that regard.
Person saying that we got, I mean, there's USC, UCLA, Washington, Utah, Stanford. Am I missing anyone?
I mean,
Arizona State.
Those are six teams. Arizona State.
So with all those teams.
And the other odd thing about that is you say that, and that's true. And then you have the ninth place team, ASU, and people are thinking they're a lock because of what they did. So and all those teams in between can make an argument, and and another odd thing is that probably of all those teams you mentioned, Dom, the one that looks like they really can make a shot is Stanford, except you look at their record and they've only got 17 wins. So it's like, you know, they probably have to get to the final or win the whole thing as well, even though they look like a tournament team now that they've got everybody healthy and playing pretty well.
So Stanford might be the answer to this question here, but out of all those teams, a lot of people are saying they got to make deep runs or at the very least get to the Pac-12 championship to, you know, make a splash and surpass the NCAA bubble and get into the NCAA tournament. Out of all those teams, who's most likely to make that four-day run in the Pac-12 tournament and kind of make their mark on the committee?
Well, you know, I would say Stanford, and I think they certainly are capable of it. But they have a kind of a not-so-great history in the Pac-12 tournament. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It seems like they always often disappoint, and I know I think part of it is they have spring quarter finals around this time, and they just don't seem to be the same. But they, they've got everybody back, and they're more athletic in the backcourt that they've been with Davis, and I think they've got some potential this year. But they'd have to make a four-game run, of course, which only Colorado has done since they've gone to 12 teams, and they did it back in 11-12, and that was a year when the league was down. So it's hard to say. I mean, Oregon's kind of in that same boat. They have a lot of talent. Maybe, you know, sometimes, you know, in these kind of terms, a team with a lot of talent that's been a little bit underachieving or had injuries during the year, they get hot and they can play four games so in 3 and 4 days. So it might be those two. And then, you know, certainly of the teams that have buys, maybe you think about Utah a little bit, and they could get in the tournament, I would think, with, you know, maybe just one or two wins.
I'm looking at the Pac-12 tournament bracket right now, and it's, to personally, in my opinion, I think that Arizona could actually lose before getting to the Pac-12 championship, because I'm looking at their side of the bracket. Not only would they have to play the winner of ASU Colorado, again, the Wildcats lost to the Buffaloes earlier this year. Parker Jackson Cartwright had some troubles with McKinley Wright. Or they could also play ASU, which, as we all know, it's very difficult to beat three teams in a row, especially in the Pac-12. But then you also look ahead to, I think, Cal. They're even though they played Arizona tough at home recently, I don't think they're going to give them a challenge. But then you see Stanford and then UCLA that could play Arizona in the semifinals. So, I don't know about you, Bruce, but I think that Arizona could lose before the weekend. I'm wondering if you feel the same way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, anything could go, especially no matter who they get Friday. It's going to be a tough team if they even get to Friday. You're right. Absolutely. I mean, ASU, both those games went down to the wire, and they lost to Colorado. And Colorado also gave a pretty good game here at McHale. And, they're both both Colorado and ASU are, you know, strong teams in the on the perimeter in the backcourt, and if they get hot, it could really be interesting there. And then you're right, if Stanford happens to get there, you know, could be that they could, you know, they've proven a tough matchup for Arizona, especially the way Travis is like the only guy really who's been able to slow DeAndre Ayton down at all practice. It seems like, you know, yeah, slow
not stop him, slow
down. Yeah, he can't say stop. And then UCLA, you know, they beat Arizona. So, I mean, it's going to be tough. And we've seen, I think, you know, there's Arizona and UCLA in the Miller era have had some great battles in that Pac-12 tournament. And, you know, a lot of them have gone to UCLA. It's they're not an easy team to play there. They've never been. And they're one of the few teams outside of Arizona that gets some support up there. So if it's a UCLA-Arizona semifinal, it'll be almost 50-50, where if it's Arizona against anybody else, it seems like it's 75% Arizona fans in there, you know. So, it's I think every game's going to be, even though Arizona's the favorite, there's, you know, it's, you know, it really every game could be, you know, there's at least a third chance that they could lose any of these three games, I would think.
Bruce, I've seen a lot of people say, and it's hard to make a case against this, but Arizona doesn't really have a whole lot to play for going up to Las Vegas this week. You know, they're pretty much a lock in around the 4-5 seed area. You know, you can make an argument, I guess, that they have to maybe make a deep run in the Pac-12 to get out in the West, in that West region. But what is Arizona playing for? Because there's not a whole lot of difference between the 4-5 seed. Although I guess people filling out brackets, you would say, well, you don't want to be a 5 seed.
No,
but, right,
4-5.
Yeah, 5-12 game.
Right, but I mean, realistically, in Arizona's minds, outside of a Pac-12 title, what are they playing for this week?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. There's really not much in, as far as bracketology is concerned, and that 4-5 is a very subtle difference. There's no telling, you know, sometimes the 13s are pretty good too. But a 5-12 game is a little bit scary. The other thing is, if you drop below that 4 line as a 5, you don't necessarily get that geographic protection. You probably would go to San Diego, and there's probably nobody else nearby. But usually, if you're below the 4, you could conceivably play an underdog that's closer to that site than you are. I don't think that's possible in the case of San Diego. But, you know, there's a little bit of benefit there. Another, you know, but I think mostly, honestly, they're mostly playing for a little bit of pride. And if they've been talking about rallying around the distractions they've had or the issues with everything. And you know, now's the time to prove it. And they can, you know, they have their whole team, and that's the other thing. You know, everybody's back. Even Ira Lee, now he's talking about coming. He should be back this weekend. They've got Trier back from a drug test. They've got Raleigh Alkins back from his foot. And they've got Sean Miller back. So, you know, as weird as the season's been, there's been, you know, several weeks where they've had everybody, but not often. And right now in the postseason, they've got everybody. And this is their chance to really, you know, if they are going to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament, you know, this would be a week where they really need to turn it on now that they've got everybody and they're a week past that distraction and the whole Sean Miller statement. All that stuff is behind now. So it's just, you know, if I'm them thinking this is our chance to go play basketball and just show what we can do.
Is that enough? I mean, you got teams that multiple, I mean, several teams, a handful of teams at least playing for their lives out here this weekend. Is pride in the fact that they have all their team, all their team healthy. Is that enough to make a run in the Pac-12 tournament?
You know, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's going to be really tough because it's that. Well, of course, they have more talent. So, you know, if it's a close call and maybe there's a little edge with some other teams in motion, Arizona can still win because they're so much more talented than almost everybody. But in the case of, like, you know, you take a case like ASU, they've got a few seniors. Stanford, you know, three really key seniors that have been there forever, and you know they're going to be playing for their lives. You know, UCLA, you've got, they're probably going to be in, but, you know, I'm sure Aaron Holiday and Thomas Welsh, who are seniors, they don't want to risk missing the tournament. They're going to try and do what they can too, and SC as well. So yeah, it's just, you know, and even, yeah, just all the way across the board. You're right. Absolutely. They're going to face a lot of emotion. And that's what I was saying before with Justin, that it's, even though on the outside, it may not look like that exciting a tournament, I think, because of all the bubbles that everybody's facing, and even SC and UCLA know they're not locks. You know, I think everybody's going to really be, really be motivated for this. And Arizona, frankly, has the least motivation of anybody.
Right, and Arizona's going to be. They always get every team's best shot. I think that's going to be the case more so this week. Yeah. I think, but especially this week, when every team has so much to play for, except for Arizona.
Yeah, Arizona.
Right. I think
they'll be getting it.
Arizona's chilling. Bruce, right. Go ahead.
It'll help them though that it is, you know, and Justin's seen this too. It's just it'll help them that it's really almost a home court advantage for them when they're playing there, except for when they play UCLA. If they play UCLA, then it might be closer to 50-50, like I said. But that can boost them up, especially that first game on Thursday when, you know, it might otherwise be pretty quiet. Most likely, whether it's ASU or Colorado, most likely they're not going to have a whole lot of fans there, and it'll be like an Arizona home game, and that could be enough to help lift them a little bit too.
What's the biggest storyline outside of Arizona that we don't know about in the Pac-12 tournament? Oh, I guess we kind of know – some storylines in the Pac-12, but what's something that kind of sparked your interest heading into this week? If you were to choose one.
Wow, that's a tough one.
I finally stumped Bruce Pascoe.
We did it!
You know, I guess I'd have to say Stanford again, because they've got those three seniors. Well, Travis, I think of him as a senior. He's technically a redshirt junior, and I guess he's maybe going to come back, which is interesting. But they, you know, and just the way they came down here last weekend and almost beat Arizona and then beat ASU, they have so many losses early, but they were without Dorian Pickens for like 12 games and without Casey Opala, one of their other starters, because of the academics. And, you know, now they've got a whole team. I'm just really interested to see, are they really finally going to be that team that they could be? And they're interesting too, because they start with Cal. Even though they had to play that extra game, they play Cal in that first game, which should be an easy game. And there is sort of that theory, and Kevin O'Neill said this today when asked him about it, and I think it's true, it's proven out with the results. A lot of times if you have that first game and you win it, you're better off on Thursday against a team that's coming in cold. They haven't been to the arena, they haven't seen the Nets, or, you know, gotten out there, and you have a little bit of momentum if you're that team. However, it does tend to catch up with you by Friday or Saturday, and you know, it's hard to make that four-game run. But a lot of times, those teams that win on Wednesday, they can either win or make it really tough, more so than people expect on Thursday. So Stanford's got that, you know, if they can get past Cal pretty easily, keep their guys pretty rested, you know, it could be a really interesting game against UCLA on Thursday.
Real quick before you go, I would say my probably most intriguing storyline outside of Arizona, and I'm going to be in attendance for this game, is Washington State versus Oregon. That is the late game at 8:30. And I'm interested in that because this could be Ernie Kent's last game coaching in the Pac-12. And it's against his former team, the Oregon Ducks.
And they just beat him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the weird thing. Yeah. They beat him at Pullman. After Oregon had beaten Arizona, they go up to Pullman and lose. And then they beat you.
Go figure.
That's all basketball.
Yeah. So who's going to show up in that game? You're right. And especially, and it'll be crazy, too, because it'll be like, yeah, the late game. There'll probably be like 4,000 people watching it. And yet those players
will watching.
They'll be playing, you know, all out for that. And I think, you know, that is a really interesting game because Oregon has a lot of talent. They should be able to take care of it. But Washington State's got some things, you know, if they get – they get hot, they can be interesting. You know, they got a couple pretty good guards. With Flynn is really good, and Franks, you know, he saw he was the most improved player of the year. He can get hot, and you know, you never know with a in a game like that. They might, you know, they've had a disappointing season, and this is their chance to redeem themselves as well.
All right. Well, that's Arizona Daily Star, Bruce Pascoe. Bruce, I don't know if you heard the hip hop horn in the background.
Did you hear?
Dom accidentally let off the hip hop horn when you
finished
your
sentence. We're excited to have you on, Bruce.
Does that mean I'm talking too much?
No, that means we're hyping you up. All right, well, that's Arizona Daily Star basketball beat writer Bruce Pascoe. You can follow him on Twitter at Bruce Pascoe for all of his coverage out there for the Pac-12 tournament in Las Vegas. Bruce, thanks for hopping on the podcast.
All right, guys.
Thanks, yeah, Bruce. Thanks for having me. Thank you. Okay, well, Dom, premature hip hop horn.
I was gonna hit you with so many rap hip hop horns. Let me let Bruce go. You have no idea.
You got one out though. But anyways, I think it's pretty much time to close up shop for this podcast.
Justin, really quick before we go, you're a bracketeer. I guess we can call you a bracketeer expert.
I'm a musketeer, but you
fill out brackets. You fill out brackets, yes. for a living, we can say.
Probably a dozen every year.
Who you got in the Pac-12 tournament?
You
got one pick. Who you picking to win it all?
I don't want to say Arizona because that's too easy. Because I think Arizona's going to win.
Arizona, that's why I ask. Because Arizona, I think they got the hardest second round matchup of anyone. I mean, they got Colorado who played him tough and beat him this year, and ASU who's played him tough twice down to the wire. So
and even if they win that game, they're probably going to play the winner of Stanford or UCLA.
Yeah.
Like that's
USC.
They're on the other side of the bracket.
Oh, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're right.
Man. Yeah, man, that's tough. That is really tough.
Because a lot of people got USC getting upset early too
by Washington.
Yeah, a lot of people have Hopkins squad going in there and doing some damage.
I'll say Washington.
Okay,
I'll say Coach of the Year leading his boys.
That's an impressive pick. I like that.
And Washington plays Arizona in the Pac-12 championship.
I like it a lot.
Lorenzo Romar playing against his former team. The Arizona looking to avenge their loss.
An intriguing rematch. I never thought about that. I'd like to see that.
That's going
to
be
–
and that will be on FS1. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that will do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, now Instagram. You can download the Wildcaster app, or if you're driving in the car, you're working out, I don't know.
Podcast app.
Yeah.
That podcast app?
Apple Podcast.
Apple Podcast
app. Apple Podcast. Yes. Subscribe to it on Apple Podcast. If you have an iPhone, you can literally just open up Apple Music or Apple, go to your podcast, search the Wildcaster, and subscribe to it. That sends out push notifications, so anytime we do a podcast, you'll be sure to know about it first. Anyways, for Dom, I'm Justin. The Arizona Wildcats take on either Colorado or ASU at noon Pacific time on Pac-12 networks for the first round of the Pac-12 tournament. We'll see you next time.
Vegas.
Viva Las Vegas!